Welcome to the Hay Matters podcast, brought to you by Local Ag and Feed Central. This is your go-to source for all things hay-related in Australia. I'm your host, John Paul Driver. In today's episode, we're joined by Gillian Fennell. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be here on Feed Central's podcast today.
Now, Gillian, tell us a little bit about your not-so-little operation.
Oh, that's pretty funny, actually, because in the scheme of things, in where I live in Australia, we are one of the smaller operations. We've got about 1 million acres and about 5,000 head of breeding cows. And in our district, we are one of the smaller places around. We also have a very recent addition to the operation, a small irrigation block down in the Flinders Ranges, about 900 or so kilometres away. So our foray into growing fodder is pretty new and interesting for us, when previously we've only ever grown cows. Family owned and operated. My husband and I and our family are here on the station full time. His parents still own and operate the enterprise as a whole. We do what we do in the middle of Australia.
So you're relatively active on Ag Twitter.
Yes.
How did you get started into that?
I don't really know, to be completely honest, but once I fell into Twitter, it was just like, there was just so much to learn and so many different people to talk to. And then you start realizing what you don't know. And I've spoken to so many people from all around the world and learned how ag's done in so many different countries. And, you know, you find amazing similarities in some areas and then amazing differences. And just understanding that, I think at the end of the day, farmers around the world, we all have the key core sort of values and problems, regardless of where our government sits, you know, what our broader global issues are. It all comes down to cost of inputs, cost of outputs, how we manage family succession, how we are perceived in the marketplace, and how we can do our job without being told we're doing it wrong all the time and being told that we are environmental demons who are just wrecking the countryside when all we've done for thousands of years is feed people.
Oh, we're going to have fun in this discussion. This is going to be great. Okay, where did you start in agriculture?
So I'm probably what you'd call a first-generation farmer. I didn't start in agriculture. My parents, my mum's the daughter of a bank manager, and my dad is a mechanic, son of a shearer. Like, we were ag adjacent, I guess we'd call ourselves. Yeah, so then I met and married my husband around 20-odd years ago, and his family, very long connection to being pastoralists and having large tracts of land and all that sort of stuff. So married into it, essentially. Yeah, have been in it for about the past 22 years.
Tell me about your interactions in regard to society's perception of agriculture and the environment.
Yeah, that's an interesting one, isn't it? I think in Australia's context, as particularly, is we rolled up, like we meaning white people, we rolled up around 230 odd years ago with very European ideas about how to farm in the landscape. And that involved wholesale cutting down trees, damming rivers, all of these sorts of things that worked really well in Europe because they have very, very different in farming environment. Very, very different experience with agriculture, because even though our Indigenous people practiced agriculture, it's not what we would recognise as, you know, agriculture coming from that European background. To be fair, we did a lot of damage when we first turned up for maybe the first 80, 90 years before we had the opportunity to look around and go, hang on, there must be a better way to do this. And we started taking on that role of being environmental custodians and managing our landscape better. And, you know, the invention of no-till cropping, you know, the use of glyphosate, which, you know, has its own sort of different demonization involved because it's a chemical, but it really revolutionized the way that farming happened in Australia, made us much more sustainable and competitive. You know, we take our job as landscape managers and custodians very, very seriously these days. That's why we feel very hurt and very offended when we're told how much we're destroying the environment, because we literally live in it every day. We, you know, we work with it. We've learned our lessons from the past. We are out of our own pocket rehabilitating areas of bush that we may have inadvertently destroyed. We're doing all of that off our own bat sort of thing, and still to be told, well, you know, your cows are ruining life for everybody. It's all their problem. All these sorts of things. We know it's not true. But we're also not well equipped with the tools to take our message forward into the broader public, because there's other organisations and people with vested interests in seeing livestock agriculture, especially finish. They're much better resourced. They're much better equipped. So there's all these sorts of things that it all comes together. I think it's all come together in like a perfect storm in this sort of current political, environmental environment that we're living in globally at the moment. And it's become very wild, very politicized. And you're either right or you're wrong. There's no middle ground. There's no acknowledgement that, you know, we could do things better or we're not doing anything wrong. You're either for or against. A lot of it's because we've lost that connection to our cities and towns. Back in the day, everyone had an aunt and uncle or a grandma and granddad who lived on a farm, and they'd go and they'd do farm things on the holidays and those sorts of things. And so everyone who lived in town had a greater connection to agriculture, and they knew the people who were carrying it out. So they knew they weren't terrible people. They knew they weren't cruel to their animals. They just like, this is their life. This is what they do. This is what they have to do. And this is the product they make that keeps me alive. And we've lost that. So trying to build those relationships back, I think, is part of why I'm so passionate about social media, because you can talk to so many different people and make personal connections with them. And they get to know that we're not terrible people as a whole. We're not all bad people. We're people just like you who are just trying to do our job and raise our families and look after our home. We've got the same goals as a lot of people who live in cities. And making those connections, I think, is probably one of the most important things that if you're going to step into that advocacy space is what you can do, making those human connections.
One of the things I'm always prepared to do is give my elevator speech, right? And in that elevator speech, I talk about three key components because people remember things in threes. If you were to give a fellow farmer or pastoralist three talking points to go out with and have conversations with, let's respectfully call them city people, what would those three points be?
Oh, wow. Three key points is that we're really good at what we do. We are already sustainable, because if we weren't, we'd all be out of a job. And we acknowledge and appreciate the environment around us because it sustains us. That's probably the three biggest things that we want to communicate to other people, because they're at the core of everything we do.
Look at that. We just gave a whole bunch of people great talking points. I'm so excited for this. Okay, let's touch base on some farm management topics, because we're both really passionate about farm management. There's always a problem that starts the discussion around farm management. And maybe I'm not going to ask exactly what your problem was, but how did your journey start in management and transition planning?
Oh, that's an interesting one, because it's always been at sort of the periphery of what we do, is like, because a lot of Australian pastoralists, they're all very, and farmers too, and it's not just sort of broadacre, it's horticulture, it's all these sorts of things. It's all built around the family unit. Even those farming families that have sort of evolved into a more company structure, it's still nearly always, you know, goes the chair of the board or CEO is always a family member, all those sorts of things. And some people can do that really successfully. For a lot of smaller family farms, it's just not possible or practical to do that. And so especially when you have kids, when you start your own family, you're like, okay, what's the future going to look like for them? So how are we going to get to a point where I know that they can, you know, live their dream or fulfill their duty or whatever you want to call it to this land, this enterprise, this ideal that we all have of being farmers, because that's a big part of it. Farming is our identity. It's part of who we are, which I think why is a lot of people struggle to step back from being the farmer. They want to, because it's such a core part of who they are. It shaped their entire lives.
It's identity.
Taken from you by the next generation is such a deep hurt. So yeah, it and then like, in my particular case, like I'd go to a lot of different events and I'd go to a lot of conferences and I'd talk to a lot of women my own age, so mid-30s through to mid-40s, and we'd be talking about, oh, my husband's so frustrated because dad won't hand over management and he's got all these ideas and he's not allowed to implement them. And, you know, and as I've watched the generation sort of progress, so women younger than me who've been to ag college themselves or have degrees or are agronomists, they're like, I've got ideas. I want to play a more, you know, integral role in the farm, but I'm not allowed because I'm a woman and I just have to raise children and cook morning tea and all those sorts of things. And you hear all these frustrations and you realize that despite all the different training courses and seminars and books and workshops that are had, it is still a massive, massive problem for all of agriculture. And the more I talk to people overseas, it's a worldwide problem.
I can confirm.
Yeah. And you would see in your role in farm management, it's phrased as an asset transfer problem or an accounting problem, but it's not. It's a communication problem. It's a people problem. And if we don't solve that first, then it doesn't matter how many facts and figures you have, it's never going to work.
The only thing that I would add to that is having that goal in mind and then communicating the legal structure and the accountants are like dead last in that process. They're still important, but yeah, they're just dead last in the process.
But so often we go to them first.
Right.
And they're looking at it from from a taxation point of view, we have to do X, Y, and Z, but where does that leave the people and their goals and their dreams? And I think that's part of the thing is we don't speak honestly enough with each other about what we want to do with the future. And so it might be mum and dad's dream to have generation after generation after generation, you know, inherit. And so then what happens if you strike a generation who doesn't want to be a farmer? What happens then? In a lot of cases, what happens if the sons aren't interested but the daughters are? Or if everyone's interested and you've only got a really small farm? So all of these sorts of things, we don't start thinking about them early enough and they cause massive, massive problems.
One professional suggestion that I have for all farmers the world over, if you're going to start to try to have these conversations, don't do it at holidays. Don't do it when you're trying to have meaningful family time. Don't do it while you're traveling. Treat it like a business meeting. I know lots of farm families that have Monday morning meetings. And that's a good and healthy practice that starts some of these conversations. That's the way that we can do some of this.
I think that's a really good suggestion because it comes back to we are so involved in this. This is our life. So we don't treat it like a business. We treat it like a lifestyle because it's our calling, it's our vocation. And so the money always comes and management and actual frameworks always come last because, oh, well, I'm a farmer, I'll just keep farming. Like you've probably got the same thing in America. It's like, so, oh yeah, the farmer Brown from down the road, he won $10 million. What's he going to do? Oh, he'll just keep farming till it's all gone.
Oh, like, you do know American farmers just as well. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. it's we can't perceive ourselves in any other way. We will just,
yeah.
And farms take whatever you can give them. And so we need to be mindful that it is a business, not just an extension of our own selves.
Is there anything else in that transition space that you'd like to point out?
Oh, I don't think we do it early enough. The moment you get married, start thinking about it. The moment you have children, like you need to start thinking about it. And it's not just because you make a plan now, doesn't mean it's going to have to be the plan in 10 years' time because things change, people change, circumstances change, markets change. All these different things can change. So it has to be something that you're constantly thinking about and reviewing and transparently and openly communicating with everyone who's affected. Family members, bank managers, accountants, you have to keep saying, oh, we're thinking about doing this. We've decided to do this.
Yeah, you have to have a team around you. We've talked just a little bit about accountants. Those accountants are helpful for communicating with your outside family team, right? As we think about the language that bankers and bookkeepers speak, it's balance sheets and income statements. And that's the same the world over. So if you want to communicate outside of the family, financial literacy is really important. But also if you want to be financially honest with yourself, those things are also important.
Yeah. And you're right, you've nailed it. You need to have a team and you need to have a team you can trust and you need to be able to, and I think this goes more for the second and third generations who are coming along, you need your own team. You can't share trusted advisors for the business, for actual business operations you can because you're operating the business, but for things that relate specifically to you and your personal, I guess, goals and your personal financial situation, which are different to the businesses, you need your own trusted advisors because otherwise you may find yourself in a situation where it just gets too messy. It's too messy and you shouldn't have to put other people in that position of having to, you know, keep secrets or wall things off from other entities involved in this discussion.
let's go talk about some fodder. You mentioned that you just started a foray into forage production.
Yeah, it's been a steep learning curve, that's for sure. Because not only have we never grown anything before, we've never grown, it's in, under irrigation, the majority of it. We've never had anything to do with irrigation. And the machinery that you have to have, and like a baler, like you would know, you open up the back of a baler, it's like, what the hell happens in there? It must be magic. Like there is no there is no other way to describe how a baling machine works, but it has to be magic.
That's actually how knotters work, is by magic.
We are so used to being self-sufficient and repairing all our own machinery. So the first time that the baler broke down and we opened up the back of it and we were like, nah. We have got zero chance of understanding that. We need to call a mechanic in. And a guy turned up with a heap of different tiny little hammers and he tapped and he fixed it. And we were just like, yeah, that's magic. We can't do that.
I can confirm that's how you fix knotters on a baler, is with a hammer.
Yeah.
Is that a step in vertical integration? Is that a step in bringing more folks back to the farm and needing, in my experience, the way that you bring family back to the farm and incorporate them is not to cut the same size cake into smaller pieces, but to make the cake bigger.
Yeah, I think it's probably a mix of both, in the sense that hay in South Australia, where we are, because it's very arid and we're a long way from anywhere, so it has to be freighted in. We've got no chance of growing it here ourselves. And so we didn't want to be reliant on other people to produce hay for our cattle when we needed it. And so we've built a massive, massive big hay shed here at the station, our biggest construction project we've done for decades. And, you know, we don't know anything about what we're growing. We rely completely on the agronomist to tell us what to do and when and why. And even when it comes down to, oh, you have to cut that hay now, it's like, oh, okay, I'll get right on that. To sort of diversify our operations a little bit. It gives us a place, because we are a long way from anywhere, it's a place for the cattle to rest and spell before they go on to market or before they go to somewhere else. Because if we're selling large volumes of cattle, it's a long way for a cattle agent to come and look and inspect and those sorts of things. But if the cattle are already down south where the agents live, you can get more agents to come and look, so you can get a bit of competition going, get a better price. And then you can sell in different lots. You don't have to sell like 5-6 road trains at a time. You can sell them, one road train at a time to this vendor, one to that. So it's a lot of different things to sort of support what we're already doing, because the pastoral station's our core business, always will be. And it's just a way to sort of support that.
Ah, that's a great way to think about that. It's obvious that you wear many, many hats. What's the most impactful for you? Where do you find yourself in that state of just ease as you're working?
Oh my gosh. I don't think I find myself in a state of ease ever, to be completely honest. As you'd know, there's a lot of frustrations that come along from being in a family enterprise, especially when you're like the in-law, you're not one of the family, so to speak. So there's a lot of frustrations that arise from that, and you find yourself looking for somewhere where you know, something you can call your own, something where you can sort of make your own mark. And I guess I find that through my leadership positions in ag. I've been quite lucky, I guess, luck and hard work, because it is hard work and you do need certain skills to be on a national representative board for grass-fed cattle producers. I'm now the chair of Livestock SA, and we represent all the goat, cattle and sheep producers in South Australia. And I think that's probably what supports my soul the most, is being able to make a positive impact for everyone in our industry through leadership and through hopefully making space for other leaders to come through behind me. Like, I don't want to be here forever. I want to make something that everyone is proud to be a part of, so that we're fighting off people who want to join boards and committees who are really highly skilled. I want to make it so popular and desirable to represent your state that, we're overrun with good leaders. That's my dream, I guess, is to sort of really build that leadership capacity in ag.
That's a wonderful goal. You have a new podcast coming.
We do. I do, yes.
Is it out yet, or is it in the works?
So I've got one at the moment I do called Absolutely Fabulous with Katja Williams, who's also known as the Ultimate Farm Wife, and that's a weekly podcast. But the other one that I'm working on, my passion project, is called Succession, when planning for the future doesn't go to plan. And so we've got four episodes recorded, and I need to track down two more guests, and I'm going to do a special episode with a lovely couple who have had what I would describe as possibly the most nightmarish succession experience. And oof, they would like to share their story with the rest of Australia and the rest of the world. Just not to bag anyone out. Yeah, they don't want to do it to be, you know, to get revenge on anyone or anything like that. They just want to share where they found themselves and why, because they don't want other people to end up in the same place as them. And I think that's a really brave thing to do. And the thing with ag in Australia is it's such a small community. Like, there's not that many of us, realistically. You can't really have these open and honest conversations about, oh, my experience has been this and my experience is like that, because you know these people, you know their parents, you know the in-laws, and, you know, everyone's so protective of their reputation and their identity. It can get really nasty really quickly. So to want to share their experiences, and that I'll allow them to do it anonymously, of course, because I don't want to ruin their lives any more than it has been. But to want to share that for the good of other people, I think, is incredibly brave. And yeah, so it was originally planned to be six episodes, but it will be seven.
Ah, so it's a mini series.
Yeah,
then.
A mini series. It's a limited edition series because, as you know, as I said before, I never find ease anywhere. I've already got another project in the back of my mind that I'll be working on when this one's in the can. So.
Oh, wonderful to hear. That sounds like an amazing endeavor to bring some of that reality. And the other thing about agriculture is it can be isolating. We have to remember that we're not alone, that there's other folks going through the exact same things. What I didn't mention earlier is that my position at the university is funded by a rural mental health grant, which is absolutely wonderful. The government figured out that finances are stressful to farmers, and so they hired me is how that happened. There's definitely a mental health component to that, and remembering that you're not alone and that you're not the only one having these problems is so helpful and like liberating, because you get in these ruts where you think you're the only one having these problems. I so look forward to hearing what you're doing.
It's so easy to think, well, there must be something wrong with me because I'm having these terrible problems. Yeah. But then you start to share your experiences with other people and they go, oh, no, that's happening to me too. And it's like, okay, so maybe it's not us as people, but it's not about taking anyone's job or forcing anyone to something that they don't want to do. It's like being, okay, well, if people are good at something, let's support them in doing the thing that they're good at and they want to do, because that's going to add value to your business in the long run.
Yeah.
Why take people with the necessary skills and put them into a role where they're not happy? Because it's going to make everybody unhappy eventually.
Oh, yeah. Spot on. That's part of being a good manager, is putting the right people in the right places. As we're managing these agricultural enterprises, it's all about the people.
And we lose that, I think, because we are our businesses. So mm-hmm. We don't think that we're managers, because we're farmers and this is a farm. And so we don't need to have people skills. We don't need to have all these other sorts of management skills, because we just exist and we just do. But you know, you look at any family enterprise that is really, really successful, well, they do take that step back and they do treat it like a business and they do invest in people's skills and all those sorts of things. So, yeah, I think if more of us could acknowledge that and even take the tiniest little steps, you know, it'll eventually, hopefully for the next generation and the generation after, it won't be such a painful process.
Absolutely. You're deeply involved with women in agriculture. There's some other issues out there that I know that you talk about. Let's have it.
I guess one of the biggest things that we talk about is we get told often that if we just shut up — this is we as in women — if we just shut up and work hard, then it doesn't, you know, you'll be more accepted. Which, what does accepted mean? Because I've shut up and I've worked hard and still be sexually harassed at work. You know, there's girls and women working in farming across Australia who are really good at what they do and work really hard, and they are still harassed and assaulted at work or passed over for opportunities. So at what point do you say this has got nothing to do with my ability but more to do with my gender? And this, for some people, they get really frightened and really upset by this sort of attitude. and that we have expectations of going into a workplace and being safe physically and emotionally, and, you know, not being bullied, not being excluded, all of these sorts of things. So it comes back to the people management side of it. So if you've got people who are passionate and good at their job and working hard, why not give them an environment in which they're safe to do so? And like we said earlier, they exist in all workplaces.
Yep.
It's not everyone. But if we continue to ignore it, then we're part of the problem. So at least just let's just say, yeah, I can see that this could happen and this may be happening. So let's make a space where this doesn't happen to people. Make it safe for people to go to work and be at work. Because in the Australian context, we live on farm, away from our own families a lot. We're isolated from other people. And it becomes sort of, it is a very isolating experience in some circumstances. You lose all contact to the outside world for periods of time. And so you are trapped, I guess, for a better sense of a word, in these little enclaves, which may or may not be healthy to be in and may or may not be safe, but you also can't see a way out. You have no support structure around you. And some businesses are really, really good at acknowledging that and making sure that people are safe. But a lot of people like, oh, you just got to toughen up and it's just part of the job. And if you remove yourself from your identity of being a farmer and just looked at it as a person problem, we're not attacking male farmers. We're not attacking, you know, male farm employees. It's like, hey, this thing is happening to some people, let's make sure it doesn't happen anymore. You're never going to weed out every bad apple because they exist everywhere, but let's just make sure we make it really uncomfortable for those bad people to hang around so they leave.
Excellent. How do you see the role of younger generations evolving in the future of agriculture?
Oh, that's an interesting one. And this is where the ag tech sort of conversation comes in, because people are like, oh, ag tech's going to revolutionize everything and it's going to change the world. And to a certain extent it has, and it will. But at the same time, farming of any description, it is going to be sweat and tears and hard work out in the elements that are going to make you successful. Like, no amount of drones or robots are going to fix a fence or pull a calf or shear a sheep or any of these sorts of things. They may take some of the labor away, like spot spraying, and make, gain efficiencies in that way, but it's still going to require hands-on hard work forever. I can't see that ever changing. And while on one hand, we do want to attract other people, like, you know, additional people into agriculture, because we're understaffed the world round. And there is space for people with a technology brain, like with a background in robotics and programming and all that sort of stuff. I don't think we're working hard enough to bring on young people who are just have a good work ethic, who just want to work hard, who just love what they do, and bringing them into the fold and saying there is a space here for you as well. We're working too hard to get all like the brainy people in, but we need people who, you know, are brains and brawn. We need everyone to come together. So we're ignoring people who have a lot to offer agriculture. Ag's a broad church. There's a space here for everyone. If you can possibly conceive of a job, it will happen in agriculture.
It exists, whether it's banking or barristers or all of the above, right?
Yeah. You can have an ag focus on any profession in the world. Yeah. Anything you can conceive, there's a space for it in agriculture. I think we need to make it not more attractive, but we need to value those people who do work hard and have a good work ethic and work with their hands and are prepared to go outside in all weathers, you know, because so for a long time, especially in Australia, it's like, oh, well, don't be a tradesperson or a farmer, go to uni, be an accountant or a doctor or something like that. And so working outside, you were seen to be lesser or stupider or not as competent as someone who went to university. But our world can't exist without people who are going to go outside and work hard. And there's nothing wrong with that. They're not stupid. Like, some of the most intelligent people I know are farmers. So it's society needs to frame the way it thinks about agriculture and farmers in general. Like, I don't know how many farmers you know that are also very skilled at welding and veterinary stuff and can also the mechanical, all those sorts of things. Whereas, you know, you go to uni, you can be a lawyer. And that's about all you can do. You can't, you don't have the capacity to build your skills in all these different areas, whereas a farmer can do all sorts. You know, it's,
absolutely.
We need to support the next generation and show them that this is a job that has value and they need to be proud of themselves.
And you're saying we need to support more avenues back to the farm than that track through university.
Oh, definitely. There's talk in Australia and has been for many years about making a sort of an ag certificate so that it's a recognized qualification. Mm-hmm. Like, and we've, and a lot of different of our educational institutions have had a go at like a certificate too in beef cattle production and those sorts of things. But what they've failed to develop is the hands-on skills as well as the business management skills. People skills is a massive component that's always been missing out of those things. So, you know, and trying to make farming or agriculture, however you want to frame it, a recognised qualification, I think, would make parents feel more comfortable about their children pursuing it as a career, because there's a really good opportunity to make good money in agriculture. Yeah. If you have a mixture of hard work, good luck, a sizable inheritance never hurts.
that just makes it easier. It doesn't make it completely attainable.
No, it's all these sorts of things. And, you know, for a long time, the trades and those sorts of things have been demonized or whatever, but we're the qualifications, we're the jobs that make the world go round. Why not be proud of supporting the rest of the world with food and fiber? Like, that's an awesome job.
This has been absolutely fantastic, and I want to say thank you.
No worries. Thank you.
And I want to say not just thank you for being on the podcast, thank you for being on the podcast, but thank you for your advocacy in the agricultural space. That's so important, and we all need to be better at it.
We do. We need to be proud of what we do and tell people why, in a way that encourages them to come with us on our journey.
Yeah, come along, learn along with us. Absolutely.
And be open to learning about their world too.
Yep, it's got to be a two-way street.
Has to be.
A big thanks to our guest today for sharing valuable insights. This podcast is proudly presented by Local Ag and Feed Central. Stay tuned for upcoming episodes.